Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and we're once again recording at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa. Our guest this week is a radio host, comedian, TV writer, producer, music video director, and a walking encyclopedia of pop culture. He is the creator and host of the wildly popular internet call-in comedy program and podcast, The Best Show with Tom Sharpling, which New York Magazine described as a freewheeling three-ring circus, and GQ called a tribunal for all that's false and undeserving in the world. And comedian Aziz Ansari.
Close.
I knew I'd fuck that one up.
Aziz Ansari.
Well, at least you said I'm sorry.
Yes. People who like The Best Show don't just like it. They want to turn it into a woman and make love to it on the beach on some weird magical island. He's also been a writer-producer on TV shows such as Tim and Eric, Awesome Show, Great Job, Tom Goes to the Mayor, Monk, and the Jack and Triumph Show, as well as today is his last day on Divorce. He's no longer working on Divorce. So if you see Tom Sharpling, don't go up to him and say, hey, congratulations on that Divorce show. I heard it's doing better than ever. They're tripling everyone's salary on that and giving everyone free tickets to Europe and a yacht. For God's sakes.
Oh, God.
And he's a sought-after voice actor.
Not that sought-after, apparently, as of today.
If you're not working for the show Divorce, he's sought-after. He's a sought-after voice actor with appearances in shows like Adventure Time, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and The Simpsons. Currently, he co-stars as Greg Universe in the Cartoon Network series Steven Universe, but he has nothing to do with the show Divorce. More than you want? Okay, fine. He also contributed to The Onion, written and directed online comedy features for Funny or Die, collaborated with performers such as John Hamm, Bill Hader, Paul Rudd, and yes, even Gilbert Gottfried, and directed music videos for everyone from Amy Mann to the New Pornographers. He's also released 6 albums with his longtime comedy partner John Worcester, under the moniker Sharpling and Worcester. Please welcome to the show, a big fan of this very podcast, God help him, and a man who once waged a Twitter war with Love Connection host Chuck Woolery, the man who is no longer on Divorce. He will not be invited to Sarah Jessica Parker's birthday party. I forgot his name.
Matthew Broderick.
No.
Oh, Thomas Hayden Church.
Oh, yeah. Thomas Hayden Church will not be having lunch with him any day soon. So the
I'm sorry
hungry, because he'll never be at any parties or having lunch with any of those two people, multi-talented Tom Sharpling.
Oh, well, thank you so much with that heartfelt, really fits the mood of where I'm at. That, oh, thank you.
Now, my first question.
Yeah.
What's it like working on Divorce?
Well, from what I hear, No, I worked on the first season, yeah. And I'm not going to work on the second season. That's all it is.
Could you please tell us why?
Could I tell you? It's just there's different people. Then it's a change in guard. And so I'm part of the old guard and there's a new guard. And I'm
it
sure,
happens.
Yeah, it happens.
The nature of the business.
That's how it goes.
But in your case, there's no guard.
Yeah.
Because
oh, no.
You're not on
yeah.
the
no, in my case, my life is essentially over. I'm doomed. It's just the, I was thinking about it last night. That I'm just at this point, I'm just praying that I'm in like a bodega or a convenience store and then there's like a hold up and I thwart it and then get shot.
Like regarding Henry.
And then that's how I go out as like a hero that I could shot in a 7-Eleven. And then it says hero podcaster. That saves people at 7-Eleven.
Or you could stop a holdup and then be shown what your life could have been by Don Cheadle.
Sure. And all right.
Hey, what's your feelings about Taya Leone?
Where did that come from?
I was studying it all.
What the hell?
What's your feeling?
That's why we invited
or
you.
Or Sergio Leone, for that
this
matter.
Well, I guess Taya Leone, I don't know. What is she has some show now that I haven't seen where she's the Madam Secretary?
Yeah, she was in that movie with Don Cheadle, which the married
one?
Man.
Oh, the one with Nicolas Cage.
Horrible.
The it was like a Capra, warmed over Capra.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Family Man, I think it was called.
She
yeah,
plays
Family Man.
These parts that get on my nerves to no end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was in a movie called Spanglish that she was pretty
oh,
rough in.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Where it's
yes.
like whoever wrote that. I mean, I think it was James L. Brooks
of all people.
It just felt like it was not... Like he was putting every negative thing coming out in the movie came out of her mouth. And
oh, yeah.
He got criticized for it, too, for
yeah.
such an unflattering portrayal.
Yeah. That was that's an Adam Sandler movie. And you end up, it's a pretty huge accomplishment to watch an Adam Sandler movie and you hate someone else in it.
Yeah. Oh. You know, I was at that autism benefit. Robert Schmeigel's.
Sure.
Our Night of Too Many Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I was backstage, and those are usually a fun event to be at,
yeah.
all these comics. And out of nowhere, I'm sitting in the makeup chair, and Adam Sandler comes by and says something like, "You know, if you had been my friend years ago, you could have been in all my movies." Something like that. And then he walks out. It was like really...
That's a weird thing to say
wow.
to someone.
Yes. Had you broken his heart or jilted him at some point?
Yes, so.
You have no memory of that.
Yeah.
Or maybe he just says it all day to everyone he meets. He's at McDonald's and he says, "You know, if you were my friend back then, you could have been in all my movies." And they're like... "What do you want to order,
yeah,
sir?"
Yeah. I could have put you in Burger King. Now, here's a story I heard years ago
Leone.
That you've heard, too. And I pray this story is true, because I'm a big Stooges fan, that Hitler
oh, yeah.
wanted the Three Stooges murdered.
Yeah. That was one of the things that was in the Cliff Nesterhoff book.
That's right.
Yeah.
What was it? The
yeah.
Comedians.
The Comedians, yeah.
Yeah.
Our friend Cliff.
I know they did the two films, those Nazi spies,
mm-hmm.
and I'll never heil again. And it's funny because I think the Three Stooges, they thought so little of them that they didn't bother them. Because I think back then... You weren't allowed to make fun of Hitler
yeah.
in this country.
So Chaplin was on his kill list as well,
oh,
assumably.
Yes.
Yeah.
And well, and I think Yakov Smirnoff.
Well, that's
was,
just yeah. That's just,
yeah,
don't you
yeah.
think?
He still, yeah. Well, I mean, Hitler. So he was ahead of the curve on hating Yakov Smirnoff. Yeah.
Credit where it's due.
Yeah. But I mean, one thing to remember, though, in all seriousness, is that here in the United States, we watch television, but in Russia, television watches you. And please don't lose sight of that. That's very important. What a country.
The other interesting thing that came out of that Cliff interview, we were just talking about it before we turned the mics off, was the Jerry Lewis talk show, which he's come here and talked about. You sounded fascinated.
It's like the, for a guy like Jerry Lewis, that's like the apex of his ego, kind of.
Now this was the 2-hour one.
Yeah, the one in the early 60s.
Yeah, that supposedly had no preparation.
And it was a show where they had redone the theater to be the Jerry Lewis Theater.
That's right.
And his face was everywhere. You said
it was on doorknobs. It was on a tile.
Yeah. And he bragged that he had this control panel that he could override the show's director and choose the shots that in case the director was not as good a director as Jerry was, which is what he clearly thought, that he knew what the right shot was. And it's just, and then the show was, I think they said the stuff started breaking down right away. Like that panel didn't work. And it just was like on the first night, the thing was falling apart. And he was, didn't he apologize for it at a point? Like take out an ad in Variety and just go like.
Probably.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I think Cliff tells a story that he just decided to wing the monologue and just.
Yeah.
And then Charlie Callis was a strange choice.
Well,
as a sidekick, a guy who was funnier than he is.
Was Charlie Callis in that one or was Charlie
Callis? Was Charlie Callis in the second one?
He was in the talk show.
You're right.
Because I remember in the talk show, the most eerie moment for me. Was Jerry Lewis is there and Charlie Callis is sitting in the Ed McMahon chair. And Jerry Lewis mentioned some guy who died in the show business who no one in the audience knows who the hell he is. And he goes, so I think we should take a moment of silence. And I'm sure, like, the sponsors are going, oh, great,
we're paying
for a moment of silence. Yes. And to make matters worse, he goes, a moment of silence where we sit. And then he reaches and takes out a cigarette case and goes, have a cigarette. And especially when you consider this guy, I bet my money, died of cancer.
So there was a Variety show. The one you're talking about is a Variety show.
The two-hour one was a Variety show. There were three.
And then there was the one he did for Fox in the 80s or the late 70s.
Yeah, that was the talk show.
Another talk show. And one with Callis was a talk show.
Yeah, and there was a Variety show, but that was like a half hour or hour.
Yeah.
But this was like the first of the...
Yeah, this was like the Saturday night show or something like, and it just, I think it was such a huge bomb right off the bat. That's the stuff I can't get enough of, just egos run wild like that. And he just does nothing but provide that.
Yes.
Like, there's a YouTube clip of Jerry Lewis on Stanley Siegel.
Oh God. That's
like in the late 70s.
Remember that show?
And it was him. It was Jerry Lewis and Al Goldstein were on together, and they were doing one of those, like, these are the new high-tech devices and the new gadgets and things. And then Jerry was just like, it's like, and here's like a camera that's a thing. And Jerry's like, I have that already. And he's like,
oh,
so he's like, it's like, but it's a high, he's like, I actually have 13 of those in my house already. He's just like, he had to win every exchange.
Yes.
And it's like, and this is when he's like coming up on 50. And I guess he had just done, Hardly Working would have been the last of the movies where he was an idiot in them.
Yeah.
Well, there was Hardly Working and what was the other one? Smorgasbord?
Smorgasbord.
Yeah. Yeah, but Hardly Working. I mean, this is the 80s and he's doing Yellowface. He's still doing that.
He's sitting down in an office trying to get a job. But it's like you're an old guy now.
Yes,
it's
sad.
Yeah.
You watch that and you go, yeah, he's he's old and he doesn't have a job. He can't support himself.
Yeah.
It's tragic.
Yeah, it's like the system is failing people like this. Can't we help guys like this coming up on senior? He's almost a senior citizen, and he's still trying to find his way through the workplace.
And yet he's always been nice to you, Gil.
Yes.
You've had dealings with him.
What do you have at home, Jerry? I know
I have 6 kids.
No, but in terms of electronics, what do you have?
What do you want? I've got it all.
Well, no, you've got a lot of stuff. How many TV sets do you have, for example?
You probably have an Advent, don't you?
Yeah, I have the Sony.
Projection system?
The projection system. I have a 33-room house. In the house, I would say there are 15 television sets.
15 television sets.
Approximately.
Would these fit into your lifestyle? Would that phone, for example, be a good idea for you?
I use the phone. I have that.
You have that in your... You have one in a car or one that's portable?
I have one in a car. I have one in a briefcase. I have one in my galoshes sometimes. This is beautiful. I'd like to get that for my little boy.
I saw him... I went to a benefit in Las Vegas a few months ago. It was Chris Angel organized this benefit for sick kids, and... my friend was just like, we have to go to this thing. And the lineup was just insane. It was like every weird Las Vegas performer, you know, like Terry Fader
and
all those guys. Yeah. And it's just like a ventriloquist, like an impressionist whose thing wasn't updated since like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then the curtain goes up and he was kind of in a chair already.
Yeah.
And it was just such a sad thing that he just was there, and he seems like he's just really at the end, and he's kind of, but he still was doing that bragging thing. He's like, my new movie is Max Rose is the best reviewed film of my career. And then we were in the theater and I looked on my phone at Rotten Tomatoes and I showed my friend Jason, and it was like at 32%. It's like, this movie's getting hammered. It's the best reviewed movie of his career. It's like, come on. It's like, it was really kind of a bummer, but he is like, he's like the only connection to those guys.
All pretty of them much are it. Dead.
Yeah. Maybe Rickles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. Like those two are the only ones who legitimately knew
all of them,
the original guys.
Yeah.
Like, especially Jerry, when you think of like he would hang out with Chaplin and all the stuff like that.
Yeah,
and he's like,
knew them all.
Yeah. So he's the last one.
Now,
then finally we're free of the past.
Yeah.
When he goes.
What was the thing about the shoes you told us before we turned the mics on? It's worth telling.
In The Day the Clown Cried, the movie that he won't release, where he was the clown in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Supposedly he is still wearing like new shoes in it, like really high end shoes. Like he still couldn't not be Jerry Lewis, and like he's like, well, I still need to have nice shoes on if I'm gonna be in this thing. Yes, I'm a clown in a concentration camp, but these new shoes I have. Yeah, it's like, those are the guys that I just can't stop thinking about, that kind of hubris.
And is it true Jerry Lewis once said, I used to work on divorce, but now I don't. Why are you doing the hour with the Sarah Jessica and the poison?
Oh. That's versatility.
Yeah,
with the Thomas Heidenberger.
Yeah, that.
You get young Jerry and you get old bitter Jerry out of the same comic.
Yeah.
And you know, when Mari Short does it, he does the lozenge.
Oh, that's the lozenge.
Oh, yeah. The cough and the, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good, that's the voice I hear in my head now.
Oh, yeah.
If anything, I'm hearing a variety of people saying that. So, yeah, it's just, and when I lay my head on my pillow tonight, it will just get, the voice will get louder and louder.
And now we're going to drag the show to a screeching halt as we bring you some important messages.
And now back to the show. Now, Tom, you're a fan of this show.
Yes.
Which flatters us.
I'm a huge fan of this show.
You are too kind.
Yes.
Anything stand out to you in particular?
In
170-something episodes, or am I putting you on the spot?
Oh, I mean, I just like the Larry Storch one. I thought was fantastic.
No, oh, that was one of our first.
That was great.
We got to sing the F Troop theme
and
with Larry.
The one that I always think of is Bob Zamuda.
Oh no!
Which, oh jeez!
When he told the story about being at the Playboy Mansion and deceiving women that he was pretending to be Jim Carrey or what was it?
That's pretty much it.
And he's pretty much. I mean, I don't want to say he's doing. I don't want to throw out actual accusatory, like actionable words. But he was testing the lines of propriety, I guess, is what he was doing. Because if you pretend you're somebody you're not and then sleep with them, that's like illegal, right? Isn't that in some way? And he's bragging about it, and it's like this is like a confession. Like he should check the statute of limitations on this. He might hear this in court. Like he'll be sitting at a table in a courtroom, and then somebody will press play, and he hears this. Here's your podcast.
You never know what people are going to say on this show.
And then it's also the thing of he and Andy Kaufman, mm-hmm. who made their lives like bullshitting everybody.
Yeah.
You got to wonder each story he tells.
Yeah, it's always where he'll tell these stories and then you're just like, well, there's nobody here to contradict what you're saying, where he'll be like, and then I went and then it was just, he tells this one story about a donut shop. Did you ever hear that one where he's like, he worked for Norman Wexler, the screenwriter,
sure.
and he would, in his book, he called him Mr. X, and he was just like this guy who would like he went into the donut shop and they wouldn't sell him the one donut. And then he bought everything in the donut shop except that one donut. And he had everybody taking their tops off and he was throwing money at everyone. It's like, this is not true.
Yeah.
This was like, this is just science fiction. But that nobody is around to say, like, Bob, you're making stories up now. And you know, there are these, I always wonder with these Andy Kaufman things as if like, Andy Kaufman is just like somewhere like on the other side, like banging on a thing like, no, he's not this. That didn't happen either. Like, that was my idea. Not hit. He seems to inflate his role in everything.
Yes.
To where it's like, you got to call bullshit on his, because, you know, Andy Kaufman was probably just like, man, how do I ditch this dude? Like, I gotta get rid. And then the phone call when Bob is just like, hears he's gone, and he's just like, I guess I'm the keeper of the flame now forever. Because he does the thing of like, is he still alive?
It's he pushes that pretty hard.
Isn't that gross in a way? It's
is
he fake his death? It's like he would be 78 now anyway if he faked his death. He would have died of natural causes already.
Like Jerry and Smorgasbord. So you grew up in New Jersey, local boy.
Sure.
What did you watch? We ask everybody that. I know you listen to comedy albums because I heard an interview with you.
A lot of Channel 5, a lot of Channel 11.
Yeah, local stuff.
Yeah.
Our stuff. Million Dollar Movie.
Sure. Yeah. I always remember there was a thing called, when I'd come home from school, there was a thing called TV Picks. Do you remember that? Where it was like Channel 11, Picks 11 had.
Oh, okay.
Where they would show video. It was like when video games, were first really blowing up in the 80s, it would be like when home video game systems, and there would be a thing where kids could play during the commercial. Like it would be like they'd come back from commercial and be like, okay, we have Billy on and he's going to play the game now. And it's like the spaceship is shooting and the kid would go picks when it's time to fire the thing.
Or, I remember that.
Right.
Oh my God. I haven't thought of that in 30 years.
And there'd be like a football one where you'd have to say picks for the quarterback to throw. It's like, there's no way to time this thing. You know, because there's a delay and everything. There's just no way. And, but then when it would be the one shoot game, the kids would just scream like, pick, 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 pick. And then they'd win. It's just like,
you remember that, Gil?
Oh, yeah.
This would be the 80s.
Yeah. That was the 80s. So.
I remember watching TV back then. They always had the Bowery Boys on.
Oh, yeah. Especially when like a Yankee game would get rained out or something. Suddenly it would be like, oh, here's the Bowery Boys are on. Like, that's how I found out about all that stuff, is just like, you look, it's raining. There's Hunt's Hall now.
There he is.
Yeah. And do you watch Antenna TV?
Oh,
you
yeah. Watch yeah. Well, it's called, yeah, there's Get TV now. Yeah. There's Antenna. And of course, there's MeTV.
Yeah. There's all these channels just running.
I know.
Nonstop.
Everything.
Old programming.
Everything.
Yeah.
You could just find, you know, like the Long Street, The Blind Detective, and
yeah.
sitcoms that haven't been seen in 40 years.
Yeah. And like,
treasure trove.
Yeah. Really. It's like Antenna just shows like, good, they'll show like good, all night. It'll just be Good Times running all night. And it's like, I hadn't seen those in so long. Yeah. And
we had John Amos here.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago.
Yeah. He's just so great. But it's like that show, it's like, 1 minute it's the most bleak, serious, it's like a play.
Oh yeah.
And then the next second, like 15 seconds later, Jimmy Walker's wearing like a leotard and like dancing around the apartment. It's like the tonal shift on the show was so nuts to be just like, it's like, we're gonna get evicted, we don't have the, like, you got fired, James, what are we gonna do, you have no money. And then this next thing he's like Dynamite, and like,
well, that was the pull and tug. That was the Esther Rowe and John Amos were trying to take the show more in that direction.
And
they resented Jimmy doing
the chicken hat. They hated him.
that must just be the weirdest moment when someone breaks out on a show that's not supposed to break out, like Michael J. Fox on Family Ties, where I mean, that was supposed to be a show about this couple. And then suddenly everybody wants Michael J. Fox.
The mother on the show.
Meredith Baxter Burney.
Yes. Yeah. She's grew to hate Michael J. Fox.
Where do you get this information?
And she used to like him to shit on a glass coffee.
Oh,
table.
Stop that now.
I think you're mixing your celebrity stuff.
You got your mixed urban mitts there.
Yeah. Getting a little blurry.
One of your influences, this is an interesting bit of confluence, one of your influences was SNL in the day. Do you remember Gilbert's season?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
When you and, let me see who I can name from that
season.
Okay,
let's see. This will impress us.
Gail Mathias.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Aren't you got a hard one right off the bat?
Denny Dillon.
Yeah.
Tony Rosato, who just passed
away. No. He was later.
He came later. Later.
Well, Charles Rocket.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, Joe Piscopo.
Yes.
Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
You're doing well.
Let's see. Was Gary Kroger there yet?
No.
He came later.
He was later. Man, I'm blanking. I'm trying to picture. George Coe was not a part of your run.
George Coe was on the original in 75.
George Coe was the four. I think he had a four-episode run.
Yes.
He was just.
He would be for the radio parody. Right. I mean, the commercial parody.
Yeah, yeah.
The one you didn't get is the one nobody gets.
Well, Robin Duke.
No, she came later.
She came later.
She came with Ebersol.
Okay. All right.
After Gene Demanian was deposed.
Sure.
But the one nobody gets is Ann Risley.
Sure, that's a good one.
Yeah. And Denny Dillon.
He said that.
You say Denny? Okay.
Yeah.
So it was just the four guys? It was you, Piscopo, Charlie Rocket, and Eddie came not at the very beginning.
Eddie, when he was originally hired, was a featured player.
So who the hell are
but
we forgetting?
Later on the season, they did make him a regular cast member.
Right. And the women were Denny, Gail Mathias, and Ann Risley.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Right. And Harry Shearer doesn't talk to you anymore because of what you came out and said.
Because we're doing a thing where we all introduce ourselves. And it's like, I don't know, Charlie Rocket comes out and says, I'm Charlie Rocket. I'm kind of a cross between Bill Murray and Chevy Chase or something like that. And mine was... Hi, I'm Gilbert Gottfried. I'm a cross between John Belushi and that guy who used to do the imitations who nobody remembers. So
not even your fault. It was a scripted line.
And Paul Schaefer is the way I found this. Paul Schaefer said to me, you know, Harry Shearer hates you.
Because you read a line that was written for you.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we told Michael McKean that, and he said that you're in a lot of company.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people Harry dislikes. We should put that to the test. We should just have the balls to call him up and see if he wants to do the show.
Oh, yes.
See if he's holding the grudge.
Yes. But meanwhile, didn't he make a shitload because he held out on The Simpsons?
Of course.
Well, I mean, it's been going for 20 years.
He would have made it anyway.
Now,
yeah, but he held out for more money.
I guess a couple of years ago there was some situation where he wasn't doing it, and he did hold out. I don't know. One thing I know is I don't any of these hold out get paid more money. That would be like for me. It would be more. I have more of a chance of like telling you what it would be like to land on Mars and walk on this than to just be like, look. And then I held out. And they came crawling back. They were like, what if we double your money? It's like, no, I've never been in a situation like that. I'm kind of like, well, can I at least gather my stuff up? Does anybody have a box I can have?
But you and John, your partner, you did a Simpsons. You guys played scientists.
They wrote a part for us. Mm-hmm. And we
That's flattering.
It was great. Yeah, it was super flattering. And it was really... It was strange how they kind of, we went out there and did it, and they just have their thing as like such a machine, and there's a certain kind of rhythm and everything to it. So kind of getting into that was a little strange, or not strange, but it was just different. But they, then like every cartoon, it's like they make it sound better than it sounded when you say it because they chop it up and they fix the timing on things. So yeah, it was great. And I couldn't believe that was like a thing that you can't even be like, boy, I wish I could do a voice on The Simpsons. It's like, when is that ever going to happen? But they like the radio show, so they did it. They wrote something for us, so it was very flattering.
We had Mike Reese on the show here, and Gilbert gave him shit for never putting him on The Simpsons.
Yeah, but it's only been on for like 35 years. So,
Gil, they're getting to you. We're going backwards to the cheese.
Yeah, it's still in just triple digits in terms of the amount of episodes. Yeah, so look, let them hit the 1,000 episode mark. Then it's just going to be wide open for guys like you to just, then they're going to get to the list that they've been holding back for the past the 1,000 episode mark.
You do a lot of cartoon voiceovers. You're now on the show, Steven Universe.
Yeah. I do the dad on that, which is nice. And I do it here.
You do it here at Nutmeg. We'll throw in a plug for Frankie Verderosa.
Yeah.
And Nutmeg, you guys both do a lot of cartoon voiceovers.
Oh, yeah.
Gilbert's on, what are you on, Cyber Squad or one of those
Cyber Chase.
Mm-hmm.
And they've called me in as the villain a couple of times on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, were you Krang?
Oh, yes.
Wait, don't leave. Waxing is free. Oh, what's up, Schnooball?
Just helping Sour Cream take his gear to the warehouse.
Oh, like a roadie, huh?
Yeah. What about you?
Oh, same old, not too busy.
Don't worry. I'm sure it'll pick up soon.
Thanks, kiddo. Whoa. Look at the size of that thing. Steven, don't tell him about the free wax.
Now, what do you remember of my season of Saturday Night Live?
I remember there was diverticulitis. Wasn't that a thing, like a punchline? That was Joe Piscopo, right?
Okay.
I remember you had a thing where it was you, it was a couple.
Oh, yeah, right? With Denny Dillon, Waxmans.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah, I think that might be what I remember.
I remember Denny on a map in the Leather Weather Report.
Oh, my God,
they put her in a leather harness and strapped her to a weather map. You remember that?
Yeah.
How many did you do again? 11?
I think, 11.
Right.
I think the last one was supposed to have that guy from Monty Python.
Graham Chapman.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it got taken off before. It is a horrible season.
And, of course, we have with us tonight Dr. Calvin Zucco, who caused quite a controversy with his theory of the myth of the female orgasm. Dr. Zucco.
That's right, Charlie. There's no such a thing as a female orgasm. Women don't have orgasms. This will all be in my new book entitled Foreplay or Just Plain Stalling. The female orgasm does not exist. Let's face it, I've been with a lot of women, and not one of them has had an orgasm. Doesn't that tell you something?
What were the after show? What did it feel like after an episode of it?
I usually pretty depressing.
Like was
yeah.
Because now they do it and everybody goes to like a restaurant and it's a huge party and everybody's laughing and having a great time.
This is my favorite part of when I was on it. We would go to a restaurant and of course everyone, whatever you ordered, you were given a check. Mm-hmm. You were given a bill for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a bad season.
And I thought, how's this a party?
Yes. You know those parties.
Yeah.
When you go and sit down at a table and then you pay for what you ordered.
Yes.
Those parties you're at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like.
I was at one of those parties earlier at Pret a Manger. I was at a party earlier and I ordered a thing and a bottle of water and then I was having a real party and I paid $11.
It's like going to a party at someone's house and going, okay, well, you had two cupcakes and Diet Coke.
But what were you guys always talking about? Did it feel like this thing was going to end any minute or was it?
I always say it's like back then to do Saturday Night Live without the original cast was like if in the middle of Beatlemania, you said John Paul, George, and Ringo are leaving. We've got four other schmucks, and we want you to cheer.
We got Beatlemania.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And so they were already panning the show before we even got on the air.
Yeah, you guys were cannon fodder.
Oh, it was horrible.
For a larger thing. And so, yeah, so you're doing that. But in the midst of that, did the Eddie Murphy thing feel different than everything? Did it feel like there was this, like, kid who's on fire?
I think he did one thing where he introduces himself on the news segment that got big laughs. And then at that point, everyone said, oh, okay.
Yeah. But did you see it?
I don't know. I liked him. I thought he was funny. But I can never say. I would, like, love to take credit for everything.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I will say is that if you had just been friendly with him, you would have been in all of his movies.
That's a pro.
Yeah.
A pro does a callback.
Yes. And
well, he turned up in one.
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah.
And but had I been friends with him, Eddie Murphy would have made Grown Ups. Which was a piece of shit, by the way. Did you see that?
I've seen parts of it on things.
This may be the angriest show we've ever done.
Yeah. But thank God they did Grown Ups 2 for all the questions they didn't get to answer in the first one. Of, you know, you weren't sure if Kevin James was going to crap his pants at the cookout.
Speaking of SNL, there is a video, the opening scene of the first show with you, all you guys in the dressing room with Bill Murray, which is kind of fun. And he tousles your hair at one point.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's very surreal.
Wasn't there a thing where you guys were in bed? Wasn't there a giant?
Yes. And we all that might have been the one where we all introduce ourselves.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
I get them all mixed up.
Mm-hmm. So they're not really available anywhere.
Thank God.
Somebody must have them.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They were putrid shows.
And was Jean Demanian, could you feel her? Like, did it just feel like she was the wrong fit for this thing the whole time?
Well, I will say that at the SNL 40th party, she got angry at me. And
you didn't tell me this.
Yeah.
You told me Lorne paid you a compliment.
Lorne, that was amazing. Lorne Michaels paid me a compliment.
That's nice.
Yeah. But she was angry at me. Well, because One time I went on one of these Saturday Night Live remembering shows.
Uh-huh.
And I just was trying to be funny, and I said that G. Demanian is the type of woman who watches a Marx Brothers movie and goes, well, Margaret Dumont's funny, but who are those other three? And I think she didn't see the humor.
Oh, she took that the wrong way.
Yeah.
That's so she sought you out at this party.
Yes.
To tell you.
Even worse, I said hello to her.
Uh-huh.
And she walked away angry and dejected.
Yeah. It seems very healthy, carrying that anger. That's what was wrong with the whole thing. If only you hadn't said that. It's just like it just didn't. Can we just all move forward from that?
Well, yes.
Tell Tom the story, and you've told it on the show, but it's worth telling. And Tom, maybe Tom hasn't heard it, of how you knew the writing was on the wall.
Oh my God! Uh-huh. Oh my God! They fired Gene Demanian.
Sure.
And then Dick Ebersole was coming.
Seems like
in.
A very funny guy.
Oh. You remember what Franken said about him?
Yeah. What did he say?
He said, "I've known Dick long enough to know that he doesn't know Dick."
and Ebersole takes us all together and says, look, you know, I've been called in late. I'm not going to make any major changes. We're going to take a week off, and then I'll tell you. And so we're waiting outside the office and going in one by one to find out our fate. And while I'm waiting, there was a little table there where they used to throw the fan letters. So I saw one addressed to me from some girl in Wyoming or something. And I open it up and it says, "Dear Gilbert, I'm so sorry about what happened to you."
He's even gone into the room yet. I love that.
Then I had to come in and act surprised when I was fired.
That's like...
That is hurtful.
Oh, my God. That's the craziest thing ever.
You have no curiosity to go back and look at any of those. Not even just out of like,
God,
no, that, not at all.
It's painful. Yeah, I cringe at the thought of it.
There must, because there are snippets on YouTube and there must be scattered around. I mean, they were never put out.
Yeah.
On VHS. The Marty Short season was never put out either. The
85?
It was on VHS. Yeah, the one where they did, where Ebersole did the all-star cast with Harry Shearer and
Billy Crystal.
And the Short stuff is great in that season.
And the way people talk about that behind the scenes, like that was just, there were two camps in the building.
84, I think it was.
It was, okay, 80, yeah. Yeah, the 84. Like, there was just these guys just stuck to themselves and they wouldn't. Like this, so there's this cast inherited of people just still working on this thing. And then like these ringers come in and they just wouldn't.
Right.
They would just once in a while deem to let one of the other people be in one of their sketches. And
right.
That there was definitely a hierarchy for those guys.
Well, they were brought in as like Murderer's Row.
Yeah.
They were supposed to be. There's a sketch. There's a game show sketch with Short doing Jackie Rogers Jr., the albino. That is brilliant.
Yeah.
And they used Mary Gross and they used Jim Belushi as Captain Kangaroo.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the one where Crystal does Sammy. And
that's right.
And
yeah.
It's really, really funny.
When he would be in full blackface on television.
I was just going to say that. Now that would not be allowed. It would kill Billy Crystal's career if he came out in blackface.
Yeah, he would. He still might do it, though. He might think he could get away with it. I think his ego, he's got that Jerry Lewis thing. He would think he could make a case for it. And that's another guy I'm fascinated with, Billy Crystal, where he had the show a year or so ago. Was it called The Comedians? And it was him and Josh Gad. And it was supposed to be one of those kind of like Curb Your Enthusiasm, like look behind the curtain and just show what it was like when Billy Crystal playing himself doing a variety show with Josh Gad, and he was always like, "So I was like, I can't work with this kid, this comedian. He's like this. He's like the young guy. He doesn't get it. It's like, well, first of all, Josh Gad is not. It's not like he's some maniac who is like he's like as conventional a guy as possible. But every episode of the show would have someone come up to Billy Crystal and be like, oh my God, it's Billy Crystal. You're my favorite performer. Like, oh my God, you're the greatest. Like, and there's supposed to be this like this warts and all performance, but he made sure every episode had somebody just like, oh my God, I watched your movies my whole life. You're my favorite comedian.
You're second only to Christ.
He just like guys like that, they just can't not celebrate themselves and make sure that something he's just like, cause he's like, look, maybe I'll do a thing where I steal some stuff from craft services and show I'm not a perfect guy. It's like, he kind of can't really rib himself too much. He's like, man, they caught me putting a case of water in my trunk in the thing, because it shows I'm normal just like everybody else. But then he makes sure this is his worshipfulness running through the whole thing. What are you doing here, Billy Crystal? Weren't you?
It is interesting that you can't do any kind of blackface now, and it wasn't that long ago. It was the 80s. He did a special, too, where I remember him as Sammy and Brother Theodore.
Yeah.
The two of them did Who's On First. It's actually very funny, very surreal. But it's not that long ago.
No, I mean, Daryl Hammond did
Jesse Jackson.
Oh, yeah. SNL, right. So I guess, was that the last thing? I think Fred Armisen might have.
He played Patterson. He played the blind governor.
Yeah, I don't think, but he also did Obama. I don't know if he did anything for that. He might have just performed that, but I mean, Daryl Hammond was in blackface as Jesse Jackson.
That's true.
So, yeah, if only we could figure out what would get Billy Crystal. I heard a thing that when he was doing that 700 Sundays, that show that like he would sell these baseballs in the lot, like at the merch table at the thing, and that he was just buying these like used batting practice balls from the Yankees. Like they were just all dented up. He's just buying them by the box load and then just signing them and then selling. Like,
Gilbert's kicking himself for not thinking of that.
I know.
Yeah. Selling that after his shows.
Yeah. You know, who wouldn't want a baseball autographed by anybody who doesn't play baseball?
Let's talk a little bit about The Best Show.
Sure.
And how everything came about. You had just an interesting history. I mean, you were a music guy. You worked in a sheet music store. You had your own record label. How did get you?
Record labels being very generous.
Well, you had a record.
Put some 45s out.
All right.
Friends. Yeah.
We'll be generous here.
Yeah.
And you segued. I've heard you say that comedy in The Best Show is a hilarious show. You had no real designs on doing comedy. You were just kind of.
I've never been
spinning records.
I'm not interested in being in front of people. Like, performing is not something that's ever appealed to me, where I just never felt the call to be in front of people. I like writing, I like directing, I like doing things, but it's more behind the scenes stuff has always felt more what I'm comfortable doing. But I just can't do the thing where just doing, I could not imagine doing stand up. I mean, what is that? Like, did you guys know when you started doing stuff that was, did you feel it like, this is where I'm supposed to be?
Well, I never did stand up. I'm a writer. He started at 15.
You never did any?
No, I wrote for a lot of stand ups, but I never.
For some reason, I thought you had done a little bit a long time ago.
Never did. Okay. No, sketches when I was in my 20s, but never had the desire to do stand up either. Takes a certain creature.
Yeah. So at 15, when you did it, were you just like, this is where I'm home up here? You know how people feel like, this is where I belong.
My answer is always the same. I always feel like I got into show business because I was too stupid to do anything else. And I was so stupid that I thought, I didn't realize the odds against making it.
Yeah.
And I was dumb enough to think, I'll just make it and people pay money to come see me.
So you never had a backup plan?
No.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yeah. And now when people say to me, oh, you know, I'm starting to do comedy, I think, oh my God, why?
Yeah. Well, first of all, everybody does comedy. There's so much comedy now.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like, I don't even know how you could differentiate yourself from everybody else starting out.
It's just like anybody who wants to make a movie nowadays, like 3-year-olds go on the internet and they make a movie.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about three.
Yeah. Sure? 3.5.
Yeah. Okay, 3.5. Yeah. But it is, there's just so much stuff now.
You raise an interesting point. There weren't, when he started, and even when I first saw you in the 80s, there weren't a lot of comics doing surreal stand-up, your kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know, not opening your eyes and shaking the mic and all the gimmicks and the affectation and all of that stuff. Everybody, even then, was pretty much doing traditional stand-up.
Yeah.
You're right. You make an interesting case.
That it's just like everybody, there's a crowd for every style now. Might not be enormous, but everybody can find some sort of group that they're talking for or
yeah, you were different. You were very different then.
Yeah. It's so weird too that I think about it and I think, like, if you say to me, think of two stars, I'll go, okay, well, Tom Cruise and Julia Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, like, I don't think they're the biggest stars around. There's these people on the internet who squeeze their blackheads or something, and they'll get, like, an uncontrollable mob to come see them.
Yeah. Well, I get that, but you always look in those people. It's just like there's always been people who kind of, it's like they're like the Raymond J. Johnston of the.
Oh,
like,
oh, you mean
you can call me
Billy
Ray.
Saluka.
Well, you can call me Ray, and you can call me G.
Funny you bring him up.
You don't have to call me Johnston.
A fan of mine looked him up in the phone book and sent me his number today and said, you got to have Billy Saluka on the show.
Because for anybody who says, like, like, there's all these talentless people these days. It's like, there's always been talentless people. And they're just, I think they just come into your house now on your computer. Like, they have more, there's less of a wall between you and them. They come to you now.
But you were spinning records originally. I mean, your music is your background.
I was doing a music show on WFMU, which is a station in New Jersey that's a listener-sponsored station. And I was doing a music show. And then comedy kind of started creeping into it. And then there was just a point where it's like, let's just do a comedy show. It's just, that's what I'm interested in doing. And this is the right fit. Because I just grew up, radio is another, just growing up listening to radio.
Yeah, I was telling radio. Gilbert that you were a fan, not of his politics, but of his broadcasting style as Bob Grant.
Yeah. Bob, did you ever listen to Bob Grant?
Yes,
sure.
Yes.
Sure. Growing up here.
When he would just, I thought he was such a, like, a repellent human, but he knew how to be captivating on the radio, and he would be so funny when somebody would, he'd be like, hey, Bob, what's going on? How are you, Bobby? And it got him so mad when anybody just said, how are you, was enough. He'd be like, what's on your mind, Bill? He was always mad, like, because it's just, they're burning up 5 seconds of the show asking, how are you? And then once, if somebody was droning on, you'd hear him just pour a pitcher of water in the background, like filling up a glass. Like, he just knew how to do that. I thought he was so funny. And then once in a while, he would do this thing, the gag hour, where it was called gag. The gag was Get at Grant, and people could call and say anything to him and just insult him for a full hour, and he would just take it. And it's like, that was really funny stuff. And it's just like, that was an influence on me in just in terms of being, just, I guess, being on and having a persona on radio. And so, but yeah, he was something else.
You abuse a caller or two every now and then. It's fun.
Yeah. Oh, me? Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's like it's so unfair. People call and say something, and then I just start talking about something else when they've been waiting a week. They've been waiting a week to say the thing they're going to say. They're on hold for an hour and a half. And they're trying to say the thing to be on topic, and then I just start moaning about some other thing, and then they're just like, well, what is he talking about? I got to drop what I was ready to say. It's just, it's not fair, but I don't know.
There's a surreal aspect to it, too. I mean, there was a teen that called and was depressed, and you started playing. I mentioned this to you on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
You started playing the entire Bridge Over Troubled Water album, singing it.
Yeah, because he seemed sad.
Yeah.
And, you know, you listen to Bridge Over Troubled Water when you're sad.
He sings the entire record.
What?
Every song. El Condor Pasa and Cecilia. Keep the customer satisfied.
There's also a thing, seeing how long you keep the kid on the line, to just be like, I don't know what this guy's talking about.
Now, please tell me that you're lying about this. You're a big fan of the movie Clifford.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge fan. I love that movie
so much. Is there a conflict?
Yeah. It's the Martin Short and Charles Grodin.
Well, we love Charles Grodin.
Yeah.
Trying to get him.
But when the two of them are in that movie, that's the whole thing. It's when you watch this movie, it's almost like one of those Jerry Lewis movies we were talking about where it's like Martin Short's probably 40 at this point. And he's playing a 10-year-old and he's in short pants.
Yep.
And just, but he knows it. That's the thing. Unlike Jerry Lewis, who's showing up oblivious and thinks he's pulling it off, that he's like people think I'm still the bellboy in this thing. It's like Martin Short knows how nuts it is that he's playing a 10-year-old against adults. And they're kind of the thing where they have trenches dug in the thing so that he's little when he's dancing next to the adult. Like, you know, you just don't see shot from the knees down anything because he's clearly on a lower level, so he looks small. Yeah, and when Martin Short and Charles Grodin together in that movie, I think is some of the, like, I think they're so funny together because they're doing that kind of slow burn. Martin Short gets Charles Grodin to do that. Him irritated is the funniest thing ever when Charles Grodin is just fed up with something.
And did you acquire something from the movie?
Yeah, I bought one of his outfits from the movie.
I admire that.
Yeah, so I have the dinner jacket that Clifford wore to the big dinner party. You remember the dinner party scene?
Oh, Gilbert, that was so good.
Have you actually seen Clifford?
Yes. I remember when the movie came out, Martin Short was at a press conference and the reporters were going, well, why were you pretending you're a kid? Why didn't they just get a child actor? And Martin Short, very snooty, goes, well, you know, to people who ask that question, I say, go see Problem Child.
Oh, so this
and
is
I
a,
thought, well, that, thank you.
That hurts.
So, so this is like the East Coast, West Coast rap
feud. Yeah.
It's like Problem Child and Clifford. I didn't realize it stepped on the toes. So that was another great one. Alexander and Karaszewski's was that was such a great one.
We love those guys.
Yeah.
Just that.
We had shaky audio because we were in a hotel room. But other than that,
when they said that for the second Problem Child movie that they wanted to shoot it on 16mm, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. Like, it's like that's not even a movie. Like, how can they put that in a theater? Like,
there's so much here. Let's talk a little bit about music. And you've done shows. One of my favorites that I listened to was the worst songs of all time, and you took calls.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people brought up Starships, We Built This City.
Sure, yeah.
Lyrics by Bernie Taupin.
That's an annoying song.
Yeah, it's a really bad one.
Did you finally, we were talking on the phone and you said you didn't remember what the winner was.
I can't remember what the winner was of that.
Was it Porcupine Pie?
It might have been Neil Diamond. By Neil Diamond, Porcupine Pie, this song that just sounds like he's just trying. It sounds like the kind of thing they would play like, you know, like when they're trying to get people in like at Waco or whatever to surrender and they like blast music at the compound. It's like that's the song that they would if they would play Porcupine Pie within like a half hour, everybody would come out with their hands up and just be surrender. I don't remember. I know I did there was the creepiest song.
Oh,
of
yeah.
All time,
yeah. Talk about that. You do great lists,
which I think ended up being, Young Girl by Gary Puckett.
Now, do we have that?
Do we have Young Girl by Gary Puckett, Frank?
Like, if you look at the lyrics to Young Girl, it's skin crawling.
Young girl, get out of my mind. My love for you is way out of line. Better run, girl. You're much too young, girl.
He's about two measures behind.
With all the charms of a woman you kept, the secret of your youth.
That's creepy.
You led me to believe you're old enough to give me love.
Let Tom do it. He knows the word.
No, this is great. Nothing.
Now it hurts to know the truth. Oh, beneath your perfume makeup, you're just a baby in disguise. And though you know it is wrong to be alone,
what happened
with
to Tom?
No, this is a solo. This is the best.
Go ahead,
the best
Tom.
Thing I ever heard.
Come on,
no,
Tom.
Please,
go ahead.
I can't compete with that. I can't compete with that. Oh, that was the funniest thing.
You know what? Let's shut the music up and just read this.
Let's just read, yes. That's the way to do it.
Wonderful.
Oh, my God. You were about 4 minutes behind.
Yeah. he says,
all right. Go ahead, Tom.
Young girl, get out of my mind.
Okay, already he's thinking about young girls.
My love for you is way out of line. So he knows he's guilty.
Yes. You're much too young, girl.
Yeah, you're much. Better run, girl.
Ooh.
Yeah, don't forget he's telling her to run. You're much too young, girl.
You've kept the secret of your youth.
Yeah. And then he's now blaming her because you led me to believe you're old enough to give me love.
Oh, here. You're just a baby in disguise.
Yeah, beneath your perfume and your makeup, you're just a baby in disguise. That's the creepiest thing imaginable.
That come on look is in your eyes.
It's horrifying.
So hurry home to your mama.
Dara, cancel Gary Puckett.
Yeah.
And Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
And Harry Shearer.
Yeah. The list of cancellations grows. That would be. Yeah.
Well, you know, we had Dana Gould here, and he turned us on to the Dean Martin thing that you guys were talking about, where he's singing to the girl on the monkey bars or on the swings.
Oh, no, I think I was the one that mentioned that.
What was the name of that thing?
That was, yeah. I looked that one up.
Mm-hmm.
There is Dean Martin, and like on the set of his show.
Paul, maybe you can find this one. Research it for us.
It's made to look like a children's playground with swings and slides.
Uh-huh.
And uh-huh. Dean Martin's there with a bunch of real little girls. And Dean Martin's there in his tux and cigarette. Yeah. And little girls around in the playground going, I'll miss, but I've never done it with a real live girl.
Oh, that's it. It's called Real Live Girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's in a playground.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like he had a stroke.
Yeah.
And then woke up and he's doing
that in
a playground.
No, he woke up and realized he's a pedophile.
I didn't even need to see anything more than that still. He's just holding a child.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it just looks like he's a pedophile.
Yeah.
And he's around these little girls. It's so, so creepy.
There's also Claire. Remember Claire by Gilbert
O'Sullivan? The man that I with you, yeah. I swear.
But it's implied.
A baby.
Well, it's implied that he's her uncle or a babysitter. It's a little strange.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then she giggles at the end. She's she's clearly a toddler.
Yes.
It's a little disturbing. Maybe his heart was in the right place.
Yeah. Was that Gilbert O'Sullivan?
Yep, Gilbert O'Sullivan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he also had.
Alone Again, Naturally.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And you give me the creeps when you hop up on your feet, so
get down.
Get down.
Very good.
Get down.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. You're a bad dog, baby, but I still want you around. So. Once upon a time, we drank a little
things he
wine.
Remembers, Tom.
Was as happy as can be.
No stopping him.
Happy as can be. Now I'm just like a cat on a hot tin roof. Baby, what do you think you're doing to me?
I have the single.
Yeah, so it's like a cry for help with that guy.
Oh,
every song
that
is
that time he was singing to a dog.
That's a dog. That one's about. That's a song to a dog.
Okay.
Which is a whole other subgenre.
Yeah, kind of like the Son of Sam. it's Gilbert O'Sullivan and David Berkowitz. What if they were singing? What if it was the same dog that they were dealing with?
Oh my God! All right, I'm going to read these real quick because I love your lists. I love that you did the creepiest songs. I love you. Now Gilbert would get a kick out of this.
But Death Wish 3.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's like I'm fascinated by Death Wish 3, where the first one comes out in the 70s, and it's like I think it's like five people. He shoots like four or five people in it.
Yeah.
Then the second one, he goes to L.A. and shoots like seven people.
Yeah.
And then the third movie, he shoots 200 people.
Oh, yeah. Because it's like a gang has taken over the neighborhood and he's blasting away at
them. He's like Rambo. I think Rambo came out between the movies, so I think everybody needed this body count now. So suddenly Bronson's rolling through New York just mowing people down.
Oh, yes.
Just running with his down the street, just shooting. Just it's like that would be the biggest story in American history that 200 people were shot in a giant gang riot.
Well, we had Stuart Margolin was in the first one.
Yeah?
Yeah, we had him here. I know you're a Rockford
Files
guy.
In those later Death Wish movies, at least there was still a gang, a street gang. But then it was like fighting the mob and everything. Yeah. It's like, no, that's not what Death Wish is.
No, and a lot of those also, like Bronson's kind of like sitting in a chair.
Oh, yes.
Kind of just like telling guys to go. Like, I think the fifth one, I think he kind of had helpers.
Yeah,
and he was like the commander of like his squad.
And Bronson had it in his contract like that he doesn't work past a certain hour.
Yeah,
so they would have to. I think they do a lot of scenes where, okay, just pick up your gun and shoot. Okay, now pick up your gun again and shoot.
Yeah.
Now turn your head and shoot the gun, and they'd attach it to someone falling down.
So it's like Fred McMurray in My Three Sons, where they would like shoot him out at the staircase for the season. They'd be just like all the, like, he or whatever, for like a run of episodes, all his scenes at the base of the staircase, they would just shoot like five episodes worth of him at the staircase just saying whatever he's saying upstairs to the kids.
Or they'd have him in an easy chair in the living room. And,
was he in that bad a shape that they had to just...
He didn't want to be there.
He didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was
already a movie star.
Right.
And this was a drop down. So he said, I'll do it, but I wanted all my stuff done in a day. And that was
the interesting thing about Bronson, too. Was it Stewart that told us this, that he had to wear his sister's hand-me-downs when he was a kid?
Yes.
That he had to wear girls' clothes.
He was sometimes had to wear his sister's dress because
the stuff you
had
learn on this
no
show.
Money.
Yeah. Yeah.
The weird thing is that Stewart Margolin knew that.
very disturbing.
What was Charles Bronson telling him?
Charles Buczynski.
Charles Bronson used to be roommates with Jack Klugman.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, House of Wax, where he's, House of Wax with Vincent Price.
Vincent Price movie.
He's under his old name.
Oh, and he's in a Tracy Hepburn movie.
Is he?
Yeah. He plays some like gangster, a henchman.
There's a great commercial he did for like this cologne in Japan.
I saw that.
Oh, yes.
I saw that. So weird.
It's the weirdest thing. It's like man great or something like that, where he's like pouring this. He's shirtless.
Yeah.
He's dancing around this this apartment. He's splashing this cologne all over himself.
And he's firing a gun behind his back.
Yeah, he really does.
Did you see the Japanese commercial with Michael J. Fox?
No. What happens then?
Oh, my God. He is like, he's like clipping hedges in a yard. And then like some big Japanese, he's making weird sculptures of the hedges, and some big fat Japanese woman sees him and gets angry, and then he makes this weird face, rolling his eyes around and holding his clippers in the air and jumping up and down.
Mm-hmm. And then is that the one that Meredith Baxter Burney was so mad about?
Yeah. Where she gets shit on by Michael. They bring in a very intricate Japanese glass coffee table.
Really?
Well, it's actually glass and tea because it's Japan.
What were they advertising? What was it for? Was it for the tables?
I think it was for Windex.
All right, you know we're gonna get to these. We're gonna get to these lists when we the next time we have you back, Tom.
Oh my god!
Because there's too much on here.
Oh god!
We do this so much. What do you want to plug? What's coming up?
Well, I do the. That's just like a wide open.
I know.
Thing
you,
for
you left
I,
out.
I know it's not divorce.
Make sure to mention divorce.
I wish we had video sometimes. Yeah, I wish people could see your face.
Well, you know, I have a fair amount of free time now. You guys, anybody wants to hang out? You can see a movie or whatever.
Well, you're doing Steven Universe.
Yeah, I'm around for that. I'm around for pretty much, I don't know if you guys here at Nutmeg need the hallway sweeped or or whatever. I do the radio show, The Best Show, every Tuesday night. So that people can check out over at thebestshow.net. And we do it live on Tuesday nights. It goes up as a podcast the next day.
It's hilarious.
And you're not going to be playing cards with Thomas Hayden Church.
Well, Gilbert, you never know where life takes you.
That's true. We'll get to these lists next time because they're pretty special.
I might turn around and I might just say to him, go fish. Like 6 months from now, I'll be just saying to him, I have 2 sevens. And he'll say, I don't even know how you play Go Fish. I'm making up how you play.
Before we jump, and we'll go out with a song, do you even remember working with this man? Because you worked with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's worth mentioning. And he says to me on the phone,
yeah.
He says, you know, Gilbert came in and did some stuff for us, but he won't remember.
I guarantee it was an Adult Swim video we were doing where you and I walked down the street eating ice cream.
I remember that now.
Yeah.
I remember that now.
It was a fun day, and you came and you did it, and you were great, and it was we were so appreciative that you did it. That was for an Adult Swim, like an infomercial that they were doing.
Did anyone ever see it?
Well, they ran it at 4 a.m, which was why that was the point. I don't think we told you that when we were trying to get you to do it. They might have left that out of the information of what you were signing on for. A Pizza Online, people saw it. It was a lot of fun, and you were so great to do it. So, thank you.
There's so much we didn't get to, and we didn't talk about Kiss or Chris Elliott or the Beach Boys or all this other stuff, and we'll get to it. Next time, you and Chuck Woolery's Twitter war, which people can find out about online,
and
if they're curious.
People should also just check him out now. He has this goatee now. Chuck Woolery has this goatee, geez. Which is just solid white, but he's still got his hair is like pitch black and this white goatee. It looked like I thought it was like a Halloween costume when I saw him.
Yeah. We were talking on the phone about why it's a strange thing that so many game show hosts are ultra conservatives, Pat Sajak and Wink Martindale and.
Yeah.
Apparently Chuck Woolery.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I guess it runs in that that game. I guess they think that they're
odd.
You know, they look at people and they just think, you know, let's get your act together, everybody. Right? Why can't you be like me?
We didn't get to Kelsey Grammer either, and I urge our listeners to check out. just Google Tom Sharpling, Kelsey Grammer.
Yes.
You'll be glad you did.
Well, thank you for having me here.
I hope you had fun.
Oh, I had so much
fun. Hope you enjoyed being roasted.
Oh, well, first I should do the goodbye.
You want to do the goodbye first?
Either way.
Well, Tom is something of an Elton John fan, which I discovered from listening to The Best Show, and he confirmed it on the phone. And he does a bitchin' version of Someone Saved My Life Tonight on his show. So, Maestro Verderosa.
Breaking my heart.
I couldn't if I tried.
Honey, if I get restless.
Baby, you're not that kind.
Don't go breaking my heart.
You take the weight off me.
Honey, when you knock on my door.
Ooh, I gave you my key.
Nobody knows it. When I was down,
I was your clown.
Nobody knows it. Right from the start,
I gave you my heart. Oh, I gave you my heart.
So don't go breaking my heart.
I won't go breaking your heart.
Don't go breaking my.
And nobody told us.
Okay, slow down. That's the next part.
Yes. And nobody told us.
Cause nobody showed us.
And now it's up to us, babe.
Ooh, I think we can make it.
So don't misunderstand me.
You put the light in my fire.
Oh, you put the spark to the flame.
I got your heart in my sights. Oh, yeah.
Nobody knows it.
When I was down,
I was your clown.
Nobody knows it. Right from the start,
I gave you my heart. Oh, I gave you my heart.
Go breaking my heart.
I won't go breaking your heart.
Don't go breaking my.
I won't go breaking your heart.
Is that enough? Did we do it? I surrender.
That was just wrong.
Oh my god, that was so funny.
Tom, you're game for anything.
Well,
God bless you.
Thank you for having me here. That was so much.
I'm glad you had fun.
So I'm Gilbert Gottfried. This has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host Frank Santopadre. And we're once again at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa.
Thank you, Frankie.
And we're happy to have someone who's taking time off from the hit show.
It's always important to, when you're in show business, to take a step out every once in a while so you can reflect and before you go back in.
And I'm going to tell our listeners to listen to The Best Show with Tom Sharpling and his partner, John Wirth.
Thank you.
And it's hilarious.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
Thank you, Tom.
Give our best to Sarah Jessica Parker.
And don't insult her husband like Gilbert did.
I thought that Ferris Bueller's Day Off was a piece of shit.
I heard that one.
Yeah.
What did you think?
He's a sport.
I think he's just a horrible human in it.
Yes.
He's the problem with everything. He's bumming everybody out, and he's selfish.
He's a horrible person.
Yeah. I do like when Jeffrey Jones is like, so that's what goes on in that family or whatever. But you realize what's going on in Jeffrey Jones' family.
Oh, God. Did Joe?
Yeah.
Sarah, cancel Jeffrey Jones.
Sorry.
Well, that's
he
one
can't
of those,
do the best show. Now.
That's one of those terrible things where you go, and he's such a good actor, too.
Yeah.
I like watching him.
And
Amadeus.
Yeah. Great in that.
Yeah.
And he was a lot of fun in Devil's Advocate.
And Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted.
That was, yeah.
Really funny.
So funny.
It's 109 degrees in here. Thank you, Tom Sharpling.
Well, thanks for having me. Thank you. No more. Please, no more.
I can't.